Chapter 1. England, March 25th, 1912. She was already some distance from home when it first occurred to Tilly Harper that she might be running away after all. "Running away, running away, running away," the pistons shouted as the wheels clattered and rattled along the tracks. It was as if the train could read her thoughts, calling out her secret to the armies of sunlit daffodils that swayed in perfect unison at the edges of the lush green fields. "Running away, running away, running away," the words coming faster and faster as the fireman shoveled more coal into the blazing furnace, pushing Tilly farther away from what was and closer toward what might be in London. Running away or running toward? She wasn't entirely sure. Lulled by the rhythmic motion of the train, she leaned her head wearily against the cool glass of the window, glad to have secured a seat at the platform edge of the compartment. She was quite sure she could easily fall asleep, if only the knots in her stomach would unravel, and the glass would stop juddering against her cheek, and the boxes and trunks would stop shifting around in the luggage rack above her head, sending a steady flurry of dust fall into her lap. She sighed, sat upright, adjusted her skirts against the upholstered seat in the hope that they wouldn't be too creased when she arrived, and glanced, for the 10th time that day, at the letter in her hand. "Dear Miss Harper, I am pleased to confirm your appointment to the post of Assistant House Mother at Shaw's Training Homes for Watercress and Flower Girls, Seckford Street, Clerkenwell. Crochet caps and white aprons will be provided. Please supply a coarse apron and bib, a holland apron for bedmaking and dusting, and plain cotton gowns for morning wear. Please report for duty on the 25th day of March, at your earliest convenience. May the good Lord grant you a safe and comfortable journey. Sincerely yours, Mrs. Evelyn Shaw." It was Tilly's mother who had first learned of Mr. Shaw's workrooms in London, after she'd seen a display of silk flowers at a church fete in Keswick. "Quite brilliant replicas of the real thing," she'd announced on her return home, "and all the more so for having been made by blind and crippled girls. You should write to this Mr. Shaw, Matilda. I believe they're looking for domestics to assist with the running of the homes the girls are housed in. You've the right sort of experience, after all, doesn't she, Esther?" There was no apology for the cold manner in which she'd said this. Tilly understood that none was needed. Her sister, Esther, had merely stared blankly at her across the gaping chasm of the kitchen table before cutting herself another slice of bread. The matter wasn't discussed again. Tilly had sent her letter of application, attended an interview, and here she was, halfway to London to start her new position. Running away? Perhaps. With each turn of the wheels, each blast of the whistle as they entered another dark tunnel, she sensed the distance growing between herself and the dramatic Lakeland mountains and fells that had framed the 21 years of her life. Helvellyn, Skiddaw, Scafell, the places that had comforted her when nothing and nobody else could. They felt far behind her now, obscured by the mellow mist of a bright spring morning, a morning that seemed almost capable of erasing the dark shadows that lurked around the muddy edges of her life. "That Harper girl," the people of Grasmere called her, a dismissive title by which she had been defined since the age of 14, when one reckless moment had changed everything. The passing of 7 years and countless attempts to atone for her mistakes had made little, if any, difference to who Tilly Harper was, or might have been. "Running away, running away, running away," the train continued with its relentless chatter, sending startled rabbits bolting for cover into their burrows, and birds fleeing from the hedgerows in a blur of dun and black against the clear blue sky. Tilly jumped at the screech of the whistle as the guard acknowledged a group of excited children who were balanced precariously on the struts of a gate, disregarding their mother's words of caution in their efforts to get a better glimpse of the locomotive. She smiled as small enthusiastic hands waved to the disinterested passengers, the rush of passing air blowing hats and bonnets off their young heads. Part of her wanted to wave back. She lifted her hand a few inches before feeling foolish and returning it hastily to her lap. But how she envied their innocence, their ability to find excitement and joy in such a simple thing as a passing steam locomotive.